Good evening. Well, remind you again about the upcoming Times of Refreshing, April 27 through 29. It will be worth your time. I've heard Keith preach a number of times, and I'm almost always challenged and better off as a result of that. So I encourage you to mark your calendars and be here for that, if at all possible. And be spreading the word about it as well. Now, if you would, open your Bibles to Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5. Our lesson tonight is entitled, Getting in Touch with Jesus. If you're keeping notes at home, you want to write that at the top of your notes. There you go. Keeping in touch with Jesus. Mark chapter 5. After returning from a brief expedition across the Sea of Galilee, Jesus comes back and he's met with a large crowd. Let's pick up in verse 21. It says, Now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. And behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live. So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. All right, so here he's met with the synagogue official, and his daughter is deathly ill. And he's desperate that Jesus would come and save his daughter. To restore her, to heal her, to take care of his daughter. And on the way to do just that, Jesus encounters another woman who's in need. And this woman was in just a pitiful, pitiful condition. Verse 25 says, Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years. She'd been hemorrhaging here for 12 years, was unable to find any relief. Verse 26 said she'd suffered many things from many physicians, and she had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. So this poor woman had been suffering and suffering and suffering, and there had been those that had tried to help these physicians. Their clumsy, inept tips had left her much, much worse off than where she was before. And now, not only was she sick, but she'd suffered through all of their efforts, and she was broke from the bills and the process of going through that, and she was just in a bad shape. She needed help. She needed help. And so she seeks that help in Jesus, and she's healed simply by reaching out and touching the hem of Jesus' cloak. Such is the power of Jesus that just to touch his garments, that meaningful touch in the midst of a crowd made all the difference. In verse 27 it says, When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, If only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. And immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt her body that she was healed of the affliction. Such is the power of Jesus. But Jesus notices. He notices everything. He knows what's happened. He's felt this power go out of him, and he understands, and he confronts her. Verse 30 says, Jesus immediately, knowing in himself the power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, Who touched my clothes? Well, his disciples think that's an absurd question. The master is slipping a little bit here. Don't you see this multitude that's thronged around you? Everybody's pressing in on you, and you say, Who touched me? There are a bunch of people that have probably touched you as we've been walking these last few minutes. What do you mean by that? Verse 31, But his disciples said to him, You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, Who touched me? And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. Verse 33, But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told the whole truth. And he said to her, Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. All right, some things that stand out to me there. One is that, she wanted and Jesus' healing power. And she was willing to reach out to him for that, but preferred to do it unnoticed. And notice how when Jesus confronts her and he says, "Who did this?" and he cast his gaze upon her, verse 33 said that she was fearing and trembling. She was fearing and trembling. Well, why was it that she was afraid? And is it really so different from us today? How often would we lack the healing power that Jesus has, the benefits that He can bring to our lives, but would rather kind of do so unnoticed? Would rather escape the penetrating, knowing gaze of Jesus, who sees right through to our core, who knows our hearts, who knows the deepest thoughts that we have, and there's something so vulnerable and exposed about that. It's much more comfortable to blend in with a crowd. And let's just be seek Jesus together, which is you know, part of what we're able to do in the church. We're not saved as a group. We stand individually before God, but as a group we can help one another along the way. But she wanted to blend in to the crowd. You know, there are some people that's what they look for in a church. They want a place where they can blend in and don't really want attention drawn to them. And so, rather than looking to serve and looking to be really engaged and involved as many ways as they can, they want to be where the spotlight will not get near them and they can just blend in and there won't be attention to their lives, there won't be attention to their service, there won't be attention to them. They want Jesus, His power, but not His attention. Another thing here is being afraid of Jesus on some levels sounds strange to us. You know, Jesus, the way He's depicted to us all the time, He's so meek and kind and you know, He's good to the weak. He's healing those. He's helping people that are in need. Why would anybody be afraid of Jesus? And yet it's not unheard of for people to be afraid of Jesus. Earlier in this very chapter, as we skip back to the beginning of the chapter, going back across the Sea of Galilee to see where Jesus encountered this man who had been possessed by a legion of demons, and this man that was living in the caves of the graveyard. He was a general menace to all those that were around in the community. He was infamous for being a destructive force there in the community, a man who was cutting himself and destroying himself and other people as well, a man in terrible shape as he is possessed by this legion of demons. And so these things that he's doing is beyond his control. Jesus goes and casts those demons out of him into the herd of swine, pigs, that then run down the embankment into the sea. Well, when the villagers hear about what has happened, they come and they see what's happened, and this crazy lunatic that used to haunt them is now sitting perfectly sane, and they see this change in him, and they see, you know, what's happened with the pigs, and they see all this, it's frightening. This change, it was good change, but change that Jesus brought was frightening. And they begged Jesus to leave. And so Jesus did leave, as they had asked Him to. The point here is, you can't touch Jesus and remain unchanged. You don't touch Jesus and remain unchanged. Life doesn't stay the same after we have encountered Jesus. Not if we have any idea at all of what we're encountering. We can't go back to the way things were before. We can't unexperience that. Either we're like those villagers that asked Jesus to go away and miss that opportunity, or we're like this woman that had the bleeding and she's healed, she's changed because she's touched Jesus. But touching Jesus changes life. Experiencing Jesus changes things. Now, what a lot of people want to do as they study the Bible is they say, basically, they maybe wouldn't say this in these exact words, but the implication is there as they approach it. How can I understand this passage in the way that allows me to preserve my way of life? The least demanding option for how I understand it. You know, how do I understand this so that it doesn't cost me to have to make any major sacrifices or to make any major changes? Ideally, we can understand it in a way that just undergirds and affirms what it is we're already doing. That's the ideal. That's what we really, really want. But that's not an honest way to deal with the text. People will explain away or marginalize any teaching of Jesus that is particularly demanding. By saying things like, well, you know, that was a special circumstance. It doesn't really apply today. Things are different now. Or they'll just say, you know, well, that was just culture, or make some other excuse or reason. And maybe, you know, some of those things may actually have some validity to it. The problem is when the instinct is to explain away anything demanding. Oh, that looks really challenging. If we really took that teaching of Jesus seriously, things would really have to change in my life. And so surely there's a better way, another way, an alternate way to understand that. Mark chapter 8, verse 34 says, "And he summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, 'If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul?'" This concept of whoever wishes to save his life will lose it is so important that it's one of the very rare teachings that is repeated in all four of the Gospels. It appears here in Mark. It also appears in Matthew chapter 16, verse 5. It appears in Luke chapter 9, verse 24. It appears in John chapter 12, verse 25. And the similar idea is actually expressed a couple of more times. It's got to be important for it to be preserved that frequently for us. Whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But when you read that, don't just think about the breath of life. Don't just think whoever wishes to his literal breath of life is going to lose it. Let's think, you know, when we're not even willing to sacrifice our way of life, if need be, and make changes in how we're living, the habits we have, the things that are important to us. We enjoy those things. Since January this year, you know, and we're not talking about history here, we're talking about current events. Since January this year, more than 6,000 people in Nigeria alone have been put to death because they claim to be Christians. There are people dying for the cause of Christ in this world, in our modern day and age, right now, in other parts of the world. And yet, you know, honestly, the things that we're willing to give up and to sacrifice, you know, we announced that we're looking at moving the address 5 miles. And some people lost minds over that. There's people dying for the cause of Christ, and well, to drive 5 miles in a different direction, well, that would just be too burdensome. What's important? What are we willing to give up? When we don't have a mindset that there's nothing worth suffering for, when we're not willing to endure things for the cause of Christ, how can we think we're in a right place where our faith needs to be? There's still a lot that needs to be changed. We still need to be in contact with Jesus. And then we return to our narrative in Mark chapter 5. And we see after this healing had taken place, messengers came to tell Jairus that his daughter has died. It's too late. You know, leave the Savior alone. Leave Jesus alone. It's too late for you. Verse 35 says, while he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not be afraid, only believe. And permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When he arrives at the house, he finds a very tumultuous scene. Verse 38, he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult, and those who wept and wailed loudly. And he came in, and he said to them, why make this commotion and weep? Why are we doing this? The child is not dead, but sleeping. Jesus here makes a bold statement that's difficult for the people to believe. It goes against their empirical senses. It goes completely against what they reason, what makes sense to them, what is logical to them. It's entirely opposed to that. They know if somebody's dead or not. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do that. Matter of fact, probably, you know, expertise in rocket science wouldn't give you any leg up on knowing if somebody was dead or alive. It's an entire wrong field. But they know somebody's dead or not. And here Jesus says, no, she's not dead, but asleep. He says something that sounds ridiculous to them, sounds unlikely and improbable and impossible to them. And so what do they do? Verse 40, they ridiculed him. They ridiculed him. Can you imagine ridiculing something that Jesus has said? Knowing who he is and what he is. Can you imagine being in that type of position? Can you imagine taking that type of stance and attitude toward Jesus? And yet maybe we don't make jokes about what Jesus has taught. But it could be that there are things that he has taught that we have to do or that we ought not to do. There could be teachings that he has that are demanding in our lives that maybe we think that just wouldn't work. And so we're not really willing to give it a try. We might as well laugh at it. We might as well ridicule it. We're not ready to put it into action, to believe the unlikely from Jesus. They ridiculed him, verse 40, but when they had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were with him and entered where the child was lying. Verse 41, then he took the child by the hand. He said to her, Talitha kumi, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. Immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. But he commanded them strictly that no one should know of it, and said that something should be given to her to eat. So there, the touch of Jesus, in the same chapter, the touch of Jesus restored the health to this woman that had been in pain for some 12 years. And the touch of Jesus brought life back to a child that was 12 years old who had died. The touch of Jesus, contact with Jesus, can change a great, great deal. Things that would be impossible. We too can have a new life at the touch of Jesus, both now and in the second coming. Colossians chapter 2, verse 12 says, buried with him in baptism, in which also you were raised with him through faith in the working of God, who raised him from the dead. And you, being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses. There's that hope of a spiritual healing. Hope of a life after this life because of our contact with Jesus. It's impossible otherwise. Now it's going to change this life as well. Things have to be different than they would otherwise. If you look at your life and honestly evaluate your life now versus if you didn't know Jesus, if there's not a huge difference, then there might be a problem. Contact with Jesus changes things. But most importantly, it's what it changes in the life to come. We too can be healed by that touching of Jesus and the touching of His blood. And where we come in contact with that is through baptism, like we talked about this morning. Romans chapter 6, verse 3, it says, "Do you not know that as many of us as were baptized into Christ Jesus were baptized into His death?" That's where you come in contact with His sacrifice. That's where you receive that touch of Jesus that washes away sins and gives us hope for something better after this life. It gives us hope for a home in heaven with Him, despite the weaknesses and troubles that are a part of this life. So the question comes to you tonight, the challenge is, will you get in touch with Jesus? And how will that contact, how has that contact, how does that contact continue to change you? We continue to change. None of us have gotten completely where we need to be. We continue to be transformed, and we continue to be renewed, and we continue to grow. We stumble sometimes, and we get back up, and we continue onward. But that change is only going to happen the way it needs to, as long as we maintain that contact with Christ. We seek the healing that only He can give, that we can't get anywhere else. And if we can help you in seeking that healing tonight, come forward and let your need be known while together we stand and sing.